CliffCentral.com.
Hey everybody, it's Friday. Yes, you made it to the end of the week. Congratulations.
We made it in one piece.
You made it in one piece. It's the weirdest thing that happened to me this morning. Sia tried to phone me. My phone was just not connected to any network. And I think it was because there was load shedding early in the morning.
Or the cell phone tower battery theft.
Well, maybe, huh? Ooh. Yeah, could well have been. But I know that there was load shedding because I've got this stupid ceiling fan in my bedroom. And what happens is, even if it's off, which it was last night, it wasn't, the fan wasn't on and there's a light attached to it. That also wasn't on.
Oh.
But whenever there's load shedding, I know there's been load shedding because that light comes on when the power comes back every time. It's like a load shedding awareness scheme. I'm not sure exactly where it comes from, but that's what it is.
That's weird.
An awareness scheme.
I got woken up by the Great Gatsby.
What?
Remember Afro?
The light across
the Great
lake.
Gatsby generator that we have from the complex next door.
Oh, yes, that's right.
That
that's
woke correct. Me up first. Yes. That's how I realized we were being load shed.
Well, let's start off the morning with picking up on where we left off yesterday on the burning platform. Lots of people commenting about that and plenty of messages to go through there too. But I've got a clip here from Dudu Mieni yesterday where she was in full flight during the testimony that she was giving about SAA.
I see what
in
you
her
did
trial.
There.
Yeah,
full
you,
flight.
Yeah, you like
SAA.
That, huh? Yeah. All right, I'm quite good at this stuff. All right.
That is why today I'm an expert in governance.
See, that, what she said there, that is why today I'm an expert in governance. That, as one of our listeners rightly points out, is the Dunning-Kruger effect in action.
Mm.
It's amazing to see. Like, I would love, and I saw her giving testimony because I was at the gym yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw on the TV that it just, you know, it gives the script underneath. And it said, she denies that Jacob Zuma had anything to do with her being appointed chairman of SAA. And I thought, you know, she's so lucky I'm not a judge, because if I were a judge in the court there, what I would have said is, ha, ha, you think you were appointed because you're fantastic. I mean, I'd love to sit there and actually point at her and laugh and say, you've never been good at anything in your life. What the fuck makes you think someone would appoint you on merit, honey?
Miss Potential Delinquent.
Yeah, I'd say
sorry,
you,
I'm still on
you,
that.
You are such a delinquent that this court case is a farce. I mean, we knew you were a delinquent before you came through those doors. Now, explain to me how exactly you think it is. And there you just heard that clip of her saying, that is why I'm an expert now in governance. In what? No, you mean you're an expert, yes. The kind of expert that drives a business into the ground. That kind of expert. And let's bear in mind, this was virtually a monopoly. I mean, SAA, you couldn't fuck it up unless you were beyond stupid. You were a new kind of stupid. SAA had no real competition because the rules, the playing field wasn't level.
Yeah.
So anyone else who was playing in the aviation business in South Africa had to fit in with SAA's rules. SAA had priority everywhere. They had special deals with everyone. They got the kid glove treatment from government. They had a constant flow of business from government, which guaranteed their survival almost.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, despite all of those odds, just like Eskom, which also had all the odds in their favor, it's like entering a poker match with just kings, queens, aces, and jacks, and tens. Nothing else. Yeah. That's all you get dealt. You just get dealt the, and you still fucking lose.
It was beyond a monopoly. It was something in business they call an oligopoly. So that's where you really, there is only one.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's actually spectacular how, like, closed off from the real world. What the hell is going on with your laptop there, Sia?
It was starting.
There's some noises and all kinds of shit coming.
Clips, askies.
It's got its own life.
Yeah.
So
she's an expert in governance.
Expert, she says.
In governance.
Yes.
Because
governance. Say it like that.
It's
a governance.
It's too early.
I know we say no politics Friday. Oh, by the way, if you're looking for Leanne Moll, she...
she had quite a Thursday.
Leanne Moll messages us this morning. Guys, I'm not going to make it. I had a client lunch yesterday. Now, that is a full...
No, a launch.
18 maybe hours ago. Okay. 18 hours ago. She must have pulled the ringer out of it. You see, Leanne still has it. She says to us, oh no, those heavy drinking days are behind me and I'm a reformed person.
Okay, since this is the circle of trust between you, me and these walls, I called her this morning and she
was fucked.
She sounded like she couldn't string together a sentence. I was about to, I'm going to send a message. I said, okay, sure.
How did you?
I said, this is the circle of trust.
Women, them.
This is what she sounded like when you woke her up.
But I believe it was her just woke up voice. That's all it was.
Jeez, what was in the oysters? I mean, lunch.
I feel kind of bad because, and I'll say this to her when she's here as well, but no doubt she will listen to the podcast. I feel sort of bad because everywhere Leanne goes, anywhere in South Africa, because of the show that we had in, you know, the early 2010s, because of that show and the huge audience that we had like anywhere between 2 and 3 million people, right? And it was just, it was like a big family and we all had inside jokes and things like Puza Thursday and it's the weekend baby and it was like a cult almost. And Leanne's role in the cult, in the beginning, well, I wasn't sure. And then she slowly became like this like lush who she was drinking all the time. Like everything to do with booze had to do with her. And she became this big-titted, heavy drinking, you know, loose woman, basically. And that's not entirely what she is. So it's not fair. It's a caricature of her.
No, she's quite a lehedi.
Yeah, she is. And she comes from a lovely family, and she's an extremely loyal person. And I'm so glad that she's back on the show with us, because it did feel like a piece of me had been ripped away when she left. So she's really important to me, and she's important to the show. And I kind of downplay how hard she could party, because she certainly had a stage in her life when she was a big party animal, right? She would pull out all the stops, and if you went out with Leanne, you were in big trouble. But that's not all she is, and then she goes off for this lunch yesterday, and I think a little bit of the old Leanne comes back. You know, she lets it rip and
every
and
now
has
and
a
then,
go.
Yeah. She's not just taking care of cats and
no, so good for her.
Cooking.
I advise everyone to have at least a few moments in their life where they let go. You've got to do crazy things. You've got to explore places that are uncomfortable to you. And sometimes, especially if you're a control freak like I am, or I find that those moments are the ones that I'm remembering the best. Mm-hmm. If I think back on the last 10 to 20 years. Mm. And I'm doing this year, I'm doing a bunch of things. You actually, Sia, got me thinking about your year of yes.
Ooh.
The other day. You remember that was like 3 years ago or whatever.
2017, I think.
Yeah, three years ago.
Yeah.
See, I had this year of yes where he just told himself for that year he would do whatever people suggested, obviously within reason, but he'd be open to whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you had some great experiences that year. And I thought afterwards, you know, that's really smart. And I'm gonna be a little more open to things that ordinarily I would say no to.
Like, so do you have a bit of a bucket list going for
not
this?
Not really, but I've said yes to things like Africa Burn, which I never said I'd go to. I'm
full throttle jumping in there.
No, I'm going to do...
Let's see how it goes.
Sure, I'm going to do whatever, you know, and we'll see what happens. So that's good. Oh, shit, someone says, oh, poor Leanne. But she is our butcher expert. This is from Ruth.
Mm.
And meanwhile, my boyfriend is in training for runner-up. I'm bored as fuck with The Bachelor already. Yuck, vomit. But to all of you who are bored with your lives, continue watching. I'll probably catch a bit here and there. Happy Friday. Whoop, whoop, yippee. There's Ruth. Yeah, I haven't watched any of the new Bachelor, so I'm not going to be any use to you, I'm afraid. Fridays without Leanne, what stupid things am I going to laugh at the whole weekend?
Oh.
See? Happy Friday, guys. Shot for the good shows. Here's another stolen song, Labyrinth Earthquake, released by Ross Jack TV in the Swimming Pool, 2013. Jesus.
Wait a minute. Labyrinth, the UK artist, and Ross Jack, the South African artist, who stole something.
Okay, we'll have to look at that.
Okay.
stolen songs. It's always something that comes up on the show because every time anyone hears something that they think sounds familiar, they're like, oh, hang on, that could be a song that I heard 20 years ago. And
some
then they
court
dig it up.
Case going yeah. on somewhere else. Hey, I wonder what happened with Daniel Barron and David Guetta.
Well, do you see Daniel Barron flying around in a Learjet?
Oh.
That'll tell you what happened.
Fair enough.
Didn't win.
Well, that's...
I really don't... this is interesting feedback. This is from Patiswa, who says... Is it Fatiswa or Patiswa? Because it's PH.
Patiswa.
Patiswa, yeah, right, exactly. I generally don't enjoy the burning platform, but yesterday's one was really good, and that new guy seems very well informed. And my darling Mbuleleiyo never disappoints. I love how many kinds of spelling we get.
It's unbelievable.
Of your name.
It's, you should have seen yesterday on the live stream. It was. Yes. It could have been 15 people.
Yes, you did.
How did that go?
You did a little sports talk yesterday evening.
It was awesome.
Hmm?
Yeah, we got a great listenership. Hungry, mm-hmm. hungry for sports content. All no, right. It was great. All right. Bit of banter. My okay. name, but my name, like 15 variations
yes.
in half yeah, an hour.
That good. Sounds right. I'm not
Leanne
surprised by that.
Leanne is my hero, says somebody. Isn't this nice? I wish she could be listening to this now, but she's passed out. Fabian, Leanne is my hero. Lots of cream soda, Mrs. Moll. Going to miss her for the Bachelor update today. My wife lives for these updates from last year, except that this year the women are the most basic creatures known to man. They all look like they shop at Centurion Mall and can make a mean potato salad.
Yo, look, I also want to reserve my comments up until we have Leanne again. But there was, on the first episode, a lady who came in running shoes and a gorgeous ball gown.
Wow.
That just speaks to the type of characters we have Jeez. On the season this week. But she says, no, she's a runner and she wanted to show off that side of her. I'm like, there's nothing cute about that, darling.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So
no,
I was also,
good.
And also being load shed last night, I missed a bit of it, but I was catching up on catch up early this morning. But yeah, there were two evictions as well. There were two ladies who left the house for the first time on the episode that left last night. So yeah, there's quite a bit of action.
Hey, I see Cindy Alters popping in
later. I'll be your substitute.
Banana.
Whenever you need me.
You know, Sia, you could be a backup singer.
Thank you. Can you propose that to her today? Just so that
Cindy,
my cool points
Cindy Alter,
come up.
She has to be one of the best guests I've ever had, and I didn't expect it. Because she popped in here, and, you know, she was a big star in the 80s, which is no slight, because we've had big stars from the 80s here. In fact...
Jennifer Rush. I knew we were going to go
Jennifer
there.
Jennifer Rush.
I knew it.
Jennifer Rush was like a solid... listener for the longest time, and God, did we love her. I mean, really, there was
probably still
we had a relationship.
Out.
Jennifer Rush, if you're listening, honey, we love you, and all is forgiven, because she was really angry with me over some comments over the U.S. elections, and anyway, she was a
Good
big,
morning.
Like, I couldn't believe it, but she was actually listening to us every day, and mm-hmm. she was calling in on the show. Jennifer fucking Rush.
She'd call our landline.
Yeah, from America.
Yeah.
She was a big fan, and I was blown away by that, because who wasn't a fan of hers in the 80s? So anyway, Cindy Alter pops in, and she did that one big song called Substitute, mm-hmm. right, which was massive in South Africa, and I think it even went international. A big success story. And then she went quiet, and she had this incredible life, which none of us knew about, and she popped in. And she did an interview with me, and we talked for, oh, I don't know, it felt like an hour and a half. And there was just nothing that she wouldn't tell us. You know, a guest, a really good guest, just has to be totally honest. They have to treat me like I've been a friend of theirs for 100 years and just sit there and just tell stories. And I will leave them alone. I don't even need to ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
She was magnificent the first time we met her. And every time since, she's been fun. I know she popped in on some of the other shows as well. But it's good to hear she's back. She's got a new song, which is called Hole in a Ring. Sounds pretty rough. But we'll speak to
we'll
her.
Find out. Yes. She's actually like a great person I'd love to invite, in my head, of course, to a dinner party.
Do you also create these fantasy dinner parties
absolutely.
In your head where you just have everybody who you really think would be an interesting mix and you just let them talk? And
yeah.
Turns into this amazing conversation. Yeah, me too.
And you know, people loosen up after a meal
well,
or a drink.
But that's what a podcast is, you see. It was impossible.
Are you saying we should start serving breakfast now?
No. The meal's obviously a part of dinner, but to me, joking. I don't ever go to a dinner for the food. I'm sorry to disappoint anyone who's been really cool and cooked for me at some point in my life.
Yeah, you're into foodie.
But I'm not. And for me, the food is just an excuse for people to get together and have great conversations. But nowadays, you don't need the meal, and you don't actually need to know these brilliant people to have dinner with them.
So I've got a question about the obsession with dinner as a socializing thing.
Here's something he hates.
Pull up your list.
I can't ask a question now?
No, we're just bracing ourselves, but I'm ready to type in.
Are we in the USSR?
Go on.
So I don't get dinners with more than four people because I can't talk to the person six people away from me. So what are we doing?
Well, the idea is that in the old days, that these were some of the most spectacular social arrangements you could make, because you didn't go and wander around with a beer in your hand at a braai. You didn't go to a club or a bar. Those things didn't exist for people who had any social standing. So what you would do is you'd end up at dinner and you'd be placed next to people who either were your, you know, there was some kind of rank, there was some kind of list of precedence, basically, where you'd sit next to people who are of your rank or someone who they thought would really be interesting to you.
So yes, I understand the function historically.
And that's where people would meet. Probably the only place that it was socially acceptable for people to meet.
Yes, but I'm talking about now. Why are you inviting me to a dinner with 12 people? I think
it's just a hangover from the past, but I also think that people do move around at these dinners. What happens is as soon as, you know, the last course is done, people do. They swap seats and they maybe go outside, and some people smoke and some people have a drink and then you continue conversation. So you do end up meeting everybody who was at the party.
So fair enough.
And 12 is not that many if you think about it. I mean, if it gets more than that, it's a problem.
Well, if you do it at your house, okay, I can understand what you're saying. Stop inviting people out to dinner where it's like 15 people. It's pathetic. I'm never going to meet the 15th person.
I do. You're an angry person, but I do see your point.
But it's ridiculous. It's not...
Jesus, you have a lot
So what's your ideal number?
Four. I can talk to you, you can talk to me, and we can talk
I'd love to be in Bolelo's life for a day where nothing that he hates encounters him or he doesn't encounter it.
Yeah, if he governed the world, I mean, can you imagine for a whole day?
Like, what a world of obstacles awaits you when you wake up in the morning. This is going to happen, I'm going to hate that, then I thought I was grumpy.
No, you'd live in a great world because I shave all of the fat off. No nonsense. Four people, it's functional. We're there to eat, so you're not alone.
The way you describe your life, it is so joyless and sterile. And
where do you get your joy?
Yeah.
Running.
There's joy in the functional.
What does the holy book say about runners?
Only the evil man runneth when nothing is chasing him. That's from the Bible.
Hallelujah.
Yeah, you're going to hell, my friend.
And I'm wearing a thobe today, so the Bible's offensive to me.
So let's do a little twirl for like Roger Ailes used to make the girls at Fox News do. Get up and do a twirl for Sia, and he's
the way I was
you.
Holding my tongue. All right, I said Sia, I wasn't going to.
Let's have a little fashion expertise coming in here. And Fundo is also here. Fundo, pop into the studio quickly and give us your take on what Bolelo is wearing this morning. He takes Fridays very, very seriously and thinks that everything. So what do we think of this?
Well, let's just say...
Describe it first.
If Zola Bud and an Arabic king had a love child, it would be Mbulelo this morning.
That's a good one.
Is that satin?
It's wonderful.
What fabric is that?
What is that?
The material's wonderful. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what it is.
It looks a little...
It looks like polyester. It looks like it might just explode if we light anything flammable around you.
Well, let's just say it's a linen caftan... adorned with running shoes at the end.
Yeah, so you're wearing running shoes with one of those Arab...
Thobe, whatever it's called,
yeah.
May I ask...
I thought it was Nigerian, actually, because it's got a little bit of an African kind of pattern on it.
Should we call you Chinike this morning?
You can.
Okay.
Or Muhammad, if you...
Muhammad. All right, good. What do you think of this, Mfundo? Have you ever seen such an outfit in your life?
Never. So when I saw...
If you wore this in Kwamashu, they'd kill you.
Yeah, they would think that you are a terrorist or something.
Oh. That escalated very quickly.
But yeah, it's beautiful. I love it.
Would you rock a look like this?
That's my kind of liking.
All right, very nice. Well done.
There you
very
have
good.
It.
Okay.
Very breathable. Okay. That's the upside. Let's use terms like
yes.
that.
Yes. Now, speaking of foreign stuff and foreign clothes, the foreign nationals, this is according to Riette, who messaged us this morning. She said, those foreign nationals staying in Green Market Square in Cape Town, I saw two volunteer women rounding up the kids of the destitute community and schooling them on the street. It was heartwarming. Yeah, but they shouldn't be fucking doing it on the street. Those kids should be in school, in an actual school. This is where government is necessary. You know, I'm one of those people who always says, don't need government. The less government you have, the better. Absolutely. Right. But at the bottom end of society, where people have nothing, and they're refugees maybe, like these people are, government needs to make their decisions for them. They are not equipped or empowered to make their own decisions, because society is basically eschewing them. We're throwing them out. So what government must do is find a piece of land. This is why we pay taxes, everybody. We pay taxes so that all of us can use the city of Cape Town, and that we don't have homeless people living in tents and peeing and shitting in the street and letting their kids be educated while traffic is going by. They need a piece of land. It's not a ton of people. So we could find a piece of land somewhere, and government can erect some sort of prefabricated dwelling for these people. It's not going to cost an arm and a leg. You know, we're not building them a mansion, and we're not laying on endless supplies of water and electricity. We're just making it possible for them to live like human beings. Mm. And they shouldn't be on the street. And this is where I do think government has a role, to like lift up the people right at the bottom of society. Because otherwise you live in a society where you just don't care about people, and you can't pretend to be a human rights based society if you do this to people.
Well, it's uncivilized that we have it so widespread, because when you talk about being civilized, especially in government, right, is you always measure by how do you treat your lowest common denominator.
Right.
And when we have so many people, I'm sorry, it tells me that we're uncivilized. We've got the resources. So South Africa is not short of the resources. We just don't administrate it.
Right. Very good point. I don't know what the solution is, but thanks for letting us know about that, Riette. It's so tough.
Tragic.
All right. I've got to play a song for you quickly that reminds someone of Mbulelo. I've just got to find this. Apparently, this is a song. Let me just find the right person here.
Okay.
This is from Ulrich. He says, this song reminds me of Mbulelo. So it's called I Hate Love Songs. So it's another hate
statement. Okay. Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay, so let's take a listen quickly. Here it is. It's by someone called Kelsey Ballerini. Right. Never heard of her. Yes. You heard of her?
No.
All right, Ulrich, you're educating us all this morning, so thank you.
I hate Shakespeare and Gosling and cakes with white frosting, two names in a heart-shaped tattoo. I think Cupid is stupid and violets are purple, not blue.
She's got a nice voice.
I hate catching bouquets, the honeymoon phase, and letterman jackets don't fit. Your eyes can't hold stars and you die if your heart really skipped. I hate love songs.
Cute song. That must really irritate a lot of women. Because she hates all the things that most women love. And she hates all the things that Mbulelo hates too. So,
but that's why they seem like a perfect match. Mbulelo, if it doesn't work out with Merkel, perhaps this Kelsey's
and this
the
Kelsey's
girl
a little bit a little bit more attractive than Angela Merkel. I know how you feel about Angela.
And is she wearing a power suit?
Yeah, I know. What's
pants suit.
So I need to know what she studied in university. I don't want to be bored. It's all good and well you hate stuff, but
you're impossible to please.
Angela Merkel is a chemistry graduate. The fun's never going
to
end with someone like
that. They're going to get into bed. Let me tell you about the element tellurium. Yeah, it is fantastic. There are such wonderful compounds we can make from tellurium.
I can't wait for you to get into a relationship if that's what you want, because I will compile gladly at least a 7-page document for this person. Just hand it to them and go, yo.
All right.
Good luck and Godspeed.
How have Louis Vuitton not released an Angela Merkel line of power pants? How have they not done that? Have you seen her in a power suit?
Perhaps it has something to do with, you know, a target market that yeah. isn't exactly massive.
Den Power Hauser. All right, let's get on with
Maybe
it.
Maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's Power Hauser.
All right, Gauteng Education MEC Panyaza Lesufi has postponed the release of a forensic report into the death of Parktown Boys high pupil Enoch Mbyansi. Lesufi says the department will release a report once the blessings of the 13-year-old boy's family have been given. He drowned during a school camp in the northwest. His body was recovered 2 days after he went missing. He had been taking part in river rafting. It's alleged fellow pupils alerted facilitators to his disappearance, but they were ignored. The death led to the suspension of the school's principal, and a preliminary investigation found the school didn't get approval from the district before embarking on the camp. Like, approval from the district would have made any difference. I love the way these government people always think, well, if you'd only consulted us, things would have been fine. Mm. I didn't see Panyaza Lesufi running along the bank of the river, making sure, counting the boys, checking everything was all right. And he wouldn't have. And the fact is, this probably would have happened even if they'd got every stamp and every signature from every asshole who works for the Department of Education. So let's not pretend, Panyaza Lesufi, that somehow you're going to get some credit for doing something right after the fact. This kid is dead, and you can't fix that because you're just a government apparatchik.
It's also just easy to point fingers. Look, I'm not saying I wouldn't
this,
have...
This guy, I'm so sick of this Panyaza. This Panyaza Lesufi grandstanding every time anything happens. Any tragedy that takes... He's like a fucking professional funeral undertaker. He pitches up with his black suit and his somber look, and he's like, oh my God, this is so terrible.
If he was serious, you know what happens if you're serious? In China, what's happened to the health officials that have slipped up with the coronavirus?
Execute.
Not execute. That's...
I was going to say, did I miss something?
Put them in a gulag.
That is not what has happened. They've stepped down. You stepped down out of shame.
Yes, I mean, that's what you should do.
No.
My department is responsible for these schools. Exactly. If you're going to suspend the principal, I myself will resign as well because I fucked up.
If you're the leader, right, you get the most money. Mm. You don't just get the credit when things go well. If Lesufi and co,
yeah,
in anything,
oh, no, but he doesn't give a shit.
I agree.
We can all see through him,
of course.
You know, and I feel sorry for the families of these kids who, and remember, there have been something like 12 kids who have died at school in the last 2 months. Horrible, horrible statistic. It's obviously part of the fact that we don't have a perfect education system. There is no such thing in this country. But this guy is all full of talk and has plenty to say and takes none of the responsibility in actual fact. It's just ridiculous. So sorry, Panyaza, I'm not particularly moved by you. And of course, we still have only sympathy for the parents of this kid, Enoch Mbyansi, who was the one who drowned. But please, can government ministers and MECs just shut up and get out of the way? These opportunities are not opportunities for you to grandstand. It's all about the kid and it's about his family. The fact that you're using it as gasoline for your fire is just outrageous. And listen to this. The community is asking why a violent criminal accused of killing 8-year-old Tasni van Wyk was released on parole on Thursday. It's understood 54-year-old Muhyiddin Pankhakar. What a name. Led the police to the stormwater pipe along the N1 near Worcester, where the girl's body was found on Wednesday night. He was arrested in Craddock in the Eastern Cape this week after disappearing from Elsie's Refeed on the same day as the young girl 2 weeks ago. What a monster. How could they let this guy out on bail? I'm also asking why. It's not just that community.
He spent 20 or is it 30 years in prison, and this was like exactly what he did a week after being released.
Well, this is called recidivism. And it is a well-known fact that most criminals, most, especially where there is no intervention for rehabilitation, most criminals that go into jail actually come out worse, not better. And they come out worse and they don't know anything about the world that they've been released into. If he was in jail for 20 years, just think back 20 years ago what the world was like and how much things have changed. And he goes out and he still has those same vicious intentions. They may even have been compounded by the fact that he himself was abused in jail, that he was part of a gang, that there was nothing but fear and anger and pain in that jail. And now he gets out and he takes it out on some little girl. I honestly think, you know, when I'm opposed to the death penalty. I went through a stage in my life where I thought it might be a good idea, and I read State versus Makwanyane, which was the case that we had to learn at varsity because that was the case that overturned the death penalty in South Africa. And I heard Herman Mashaba saying last Friday in the interview we had, he's a fan of the death penalty. It makes it very hard for people like me who are against it to argue that position when you hear about people like this monster who gets out of jail and within a week he's raped and murdered some little 8-year-old girl. I mean, you have to be so degraded inside to behave like this that there isn't really a reason to keep you alive. And people like Herman Mashaba have a good argument that I don't really have a strong way to defend.
So what, to argue for the death penalty?
Well, in this case, this guy gets out, and you this is what people who argue for the death penalty do. This, they take a specific case and they make it, they say, look at this guy, this is the worst example. Then people who are on my side of the argument say, oh, but look at all these innocent people who were put to death. And there are always innocent people who will be put to death, just like there are exceptions to the rules. And then our argument and theirs go head to head, but they're both subjective.
And there's no evidence anywhere that the death penalty has ever reduced violent crime, number one. Secondly, I have many problems with the death penalty, but my biggest problem is, how can we, right, look at a state that says a solution to anything is to execute somebody and show that type of violence, and then the very same state goes to people, say, you don't deal with situations in a violent manner. Because if they say, we can take life...
Then they've just got a monopoly on violence.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm on your side of this. I mean, I don't think that trusting this state in particular with any kind of powers like that is a good idea. They can't. They've already murdered ESCOM, SAA, and many other things. Plus, people at Marikana, people in Life SD, many. This government has proven themselves really good at killing, for no good reason, and to much pain and misery for people around them. So let's not give them more power.
I agree.
Oh, yeah, I actually consciously stopped following the story yesterday because it was all over social media. And just, I stopped after I saw footage of this little girl's family speaking out. And I thought,
imagine she's an 8-year-old kid. She's playing around and this monster comes and grabs her and takes her away. Anyway,
who knows the family?
But it makes me cold. Apparently, amid fears that Zimbabwe will not be able to deal with a positive case of coronavirus, a suspected patient was tested and they are negative. Thank God, because you know what Bill Gates said at the beginning of this week, right?
I'm a nerd and I'm very rich.
He said that in passing, and that's all true. But he said he's concerned that if coronavirus comes to Africa, and you know he's been involved in many of the more publicized fights against diseases like malaria and many other infectious and communicable diseases. So he does know a little bit about this, and he is a spokesperson for these things because his foundation is probably doing more than the collective governments of African countries to combat these diseases. He said he's very concerned that coronavirus comes to Africa because he said we do not have the means to fight it. And he reckons 10 million people could die in the first month if coronavirus comes to Africa, which is why there's such a fight on at the moment to try and find some kind of cure.
And also cue conspiracy theories now.
Yeah, of course. Anyway, so this woman in Harare arrived from China on Wednesday. She's been quarantined. She had been to Wuhan. Zimbabwe's state broadcaster said she'd already tested negative for coronavirus in China. On arrival, she was taken to Wilkins Infectious Disease Hospital in Harare, where more tests were done. Despite testing negative, she will be monitored for the next 3 weeks, because this stuff stays quiet for like 2 weeks. You don't know you have it, and then it starts manifesting. You know, they've got that scanner at O.R. Tambo. If you walk through the passport control, it's supposed to pick up if you're a couple of degrees warmer than you should be, which is usually the sign that your your immune system is fighting some disease. Mm-hmm. It takes your temperature up a little bit, which is also why you put a thermometer in a child's mouth to find out whether or not they're hot. If they're more than the standard body temperature of a human being in good health, 37, what is it, 37?
Well, I think body temperature is what, 36 and a half?
Okay. Somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. 36 and a half, 37.
Not a doctor.
Either way, you test for this, then you can usually tell that someone's fighting a disease. Obviously, if they're just looking at that scan and they're trying to process like 500,000 people through there in a month, they're going to let some slip. It's not foolproof. And it's not as if they've got doctors on standby or, you know, they quarantine you, take you away straight away. The damage is probably done by that stage.
And so, also in South Africa, Patricia's gone to lunch. Mm. I've gone to lunch. Yo. Now she's not scanning. Now yeah, coronavirus.
She's gone to lunch. I don't want to think about this
and then
right
there's
now.
There's a void.
Making CS so uncomfortable.
I don't want to think about this.
Yeah. An illegal cigarette factory has been uncovered in Spain where six foreign workers were found gasping for air before being rescued. 12 British nationals suspected of running the factory were arrested. The bunker under horse stables in the southern province. This is like a movie.
Horse stables.
Under the horse stables. Could produce up to 3,500 counterfeit cigarettes an hour. It is the first underground counterfeit cigarette factory found in the EU. Six Ukrainian and Lithuanian workers were found struggling to breathe due to a generator designed to pump air into the bunker, running out of power. Yo!
That's hectic.
20 people had been arrested earlier in the day, but had not informed police that the workers were still inside. The panicked workers banged and shouted from below as police searched the area.
Imagine.
Actually, they locked them in to make these cigarettes. Officers eventually found the workers and freed them. They confiscated 153,000 packets of cigarettes, more than 17 tons of rolling tobacco, 20 kilograms of hashish, and 144 kilograms of marijuana. Jesus.
That's unbelievable.
What an operation. I'm kind of impressed that these guys were running this thing. Whoever ran that, very good work.
Under a horse stable.
Yes. Very good work. This is spy level.
Oh, man.
Good for you.
No, I don't think it's spy level. I think it's sadly working conditions.
What a business. Oh, please.
Keep costs low.
Yeah, you know how I feel.
You always got to keep the staff costs low.
They should have employed children. That's how I feel.
Keep costs and the ceiling low as you lock people in confined spaces.
Keep the air supply low as well.
You guys are not going to.
Nothing like kids who are gasping for air rolling cigarettes to make a business work. Good for them.
I think it was in Friedman's work somewhere, surely.
So is that where that car that we discussed driving in Uppington with like 200 kilograms of weed was driving to as well, possibly?
Possibly. Possibly, to be shipped across.
This is some nonsense.
But some news we have to talk about. Tom Tabane now also getting... he's about to be accused of murdering his ex-wife and being a part of it. I don't know if he's... How excellent is that?
No, so that's the Prime Minister of Lesotho.
Yes. So Tom Tabane, at the age of 80, is to be charged with the murder of his estranged wife, Dipolelo Tabane. So he's a part of the mix. How incredible. So he will be, should this go through, right?
Go on.
He's our bad King John, for those of you that went to know the nursery rhyme. So King John, of course, I believe the first monarch to be accused of murdering somebody with his own hands whilst in power.
Correct. King John didn't murder anyone.
Oh, who was it?
No, not to my knowledge.
Oh,
no one who was tried. I mean, they always accused Henry IV of murdering Richard II. They accused the Mortimers of murdering Edward II. But I don't know of any king who actually used his own hands to murder another king. Or there's no story like that in English history.
See, the hills are alive, though, with that sound
so
of murder.
Tom Tabane is being charged.
Right, so...
Marvelous.
This is marvelous. Why?
No, it's just so... This is so much fun.
So, right, just a quick one on that one. Gareth, he was implicated in the murder of his nephew, King John. I remember reading this. He was implicated in the murder of his nephew, Arthur of Brittany.
Not that he did it.
First to be accused. So Tom Tabane, anyway. Point is, Tom Tabane, he would be the first African statesman to be accused of such whilst in office. Believe it or not. Incredible. So this story rolls on. I thought you'd enjoy that. Mm. Siya Sangwen.
See, if when it comes to elderly people and having to face time for their crimes or alleged crimes, I think there are other ways you can punish them. At 80 years old, just take away your arthritis medication. I think that's suffering enough.
You want one more story?
Absolutely.
Okay, sure.
Then we get to the sport. Police in Vietnam have charged 7 people in connection with the deaths of 39 migrants whose bodies were discovered in the back of a truck near London last year. Do you remember that? So, the victims included two 15-year-old boys, who were mostly from 2 provinces in north-central Vietnam, where poor job prospects, encouragement by authorities, smuggling gangs, and environmental issues have fueled migration. 7 defendants, including a Vietnamese woman who's living in China, were charged with creating immigration profiles for 67 people from different areas in Vietnam for illegal work in Britain and Europe. Ha Tinh Province Regional Police said in a statement. Police referred to the case of a 26-year-old Pum Thi Tra, who was one of the victims of the British truck deaths.
Pum Thi Tra?
You want funny names?
I'm not.
Vietnamese names are the best.
Am I sounding very ignorant?
Yes, and
finding it
and
funny?
Very insensitive, because this is a story about 39 people whose bodies were found.
Sorry,
they were dead.
Sorry.
And one of them, Pam T. Tra.
I'm never going to work as a UN Goodwill Ambassador, no, right?
I'll fire you in the first day. Please.
It sounds like a
they were also
rhyme.
These people were also kept in an enclosed space. The cause of the 39 people's death was a combination of hypoxia, which is oxygen deprivation, and hypothermia, overheating in a closed space. Jesus.
Wow.
Back of a truck. Imagine dying there. What a way to go. I mean, it's just awful.
Speaking of awful, before we get into anything.
Pam
Thi Tra.
Pham. Pam Thi Tra.
Is that miss or mister?
I don't know.
Pam Thi Tra.
Look up some funny Vietnamese names. Go. Your list will make you... Go on. That's what we're going to do in the next hour.
You just sound so ignorant. Go on. Like,
it's fine.
How are you feeling? Well, I'm feeling a little Pam Thi Tra.
Yeah, you see?
Yeah. Like, oh,
goodness.
Sorry to hear it. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Go on.
So,
sport for us. You want to give us the rundown?
Well, I want to get into something before I get into the sport. How awful is what happened in Hanau? I don't know if you've seen that.
What?
So, I mean, it's been... I don't know why he's been called a murderer, because this is clearly a terrorist act.
Yes.
But where? This guy, right, so it's been called the Hanau attack. Yeah. We'll see how that developed. But essentially, the shooting took place in Hanau, a city in the west of Germany, at about 10 o'clock. So that's on the 20th. And this guy shot, it seems, 9 dead at the moment. It's unclear the victims are. Authorities say it may be they're all aged between 21 and 44, racially motivated.
Where is this?
In Hanau, Germany.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and this guy came, and it seems racially motivated.
Who did he kill? He wanted to kill black people? He wanted to kill white people?
Well, it seems like people of Arabic descent. It was at a shisha bar.
Oh, no.
So this guy, and then he was found, him and his mother found dead in their apartment. My
Jesus.
God. It's been Tobias R. at the moment is what he's known as. How awful is this? Public shooting. And if you've been to Germany, you know how conservative, and they are so sensitive to gun violence there.
Massively.
Oh, they are so sensitive to it. So,
guys, Umbululu has not mentioned that Liverpool lost on Tuesday night in the sports thing. Well, that's because we're about to start it. So here is Umbululu with the sport. Go on.
I haven't mentioned it, but what I want to do is you're going to have to bear with me. There's only one sports story today, but it is a massive one. It's an absolutely massive story. So if you've been following FIFA and the Qatar story, there's more that's come out. It's been an...
Give me the background.
It's been an absolute shambles from the beginning. So let me give you a background, right? Basically, one of the greatest football legends, Michel Platini, he fostered a deal through UEFA when he was the head of UEFA, essentially for PSG to be bought, which is one of the biggest clubs in the world.
Right.
The Qatari guys bought that, and now Michel Platini's been banned from football. But in that deal, what else was involved? Qatar getting the World Cup. Now it's coming out just how big the corruption was. I mean, Qatar's 50 degrees in the summer, Gareth. It's a summer World Cup.
Sure.
Football shouldn't be played there. But now there's more. It's gotten even worse. The house of cards, that is FIFA, is crumbling even further. So, shocking turn of events, right? Turns out Qatar and the World Cup bid and the people involved are completely and utterly corrupt. The news broke yesterday.
Oh, was that news?
Well, this is hectic. It's what's happening now,
story.
They've taken it to the next level.
Go on.
You know, so
I mean, isn't the whole Qatari World Cup just basically about corruption? because it was a setup. And isn't FIFA one of the most corrupt organizations in the world? Why is anyone surprised by this? Like, you're carrying on like you've never read a single story about soccer administration in your life, Mbulelo.
No, sure. You know, things are always, we know what's happening underneath. But when it comes out, and now it's in European football. So here's where the problem comes, is that these corrupt guys own Paris Saint-Germain. Paris Saint-Germain are one of the five biggest brands in sport, right? So this guy, his name's Nasser Al Khelaifi, right? Surprise, surprise, owner of beIN Sport. Mm-hmm. They are now Qatar's biggest media group. What they've done is they paid the guy who was, do you remember Sepp Blatter?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sepp Blatter's second guy, Jerome Falke.
I remember him.
Yeah, so okay. So he took the four. He was Secretary General, right?
Yes.
He took money from these guys to sell rights for the next two World Cups. So we know it's going to Qatar and then it's the Americas after that. And the Office of the Attorney General in Switzerland has said, you two blokes are done. So Al Khelaifi inciting Falke to commit criminal mismanagement. These are the charges. He's accused of allowing Falke to have exclusive use of a villa. So he gave him a villa in Sardinia, up to 2 million euros this villa was worth.
Nice.
As a back pocket deal. But this is the worst part, right? There's an unnamed person. And this could be Michel Platini again. So we don't know. This could be anyone who's being charged with incitement to commit criminal mismanagement and bribery.
Sure.
The same Qatari guy, by the way, last year, if you're into athletics, he's already been prosecuted, right, for corruption. The World Athletics Championships that went to Qatar last year.
You've pronounced Qatar in so many different ways during this sports report. I think that's the most exciting story of the day.
They should make it easier to pronounce it. So
Qatar.
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 The Americans say
Qatar.
It's like
your name. It's like Imbulelelelio.
Look, fantastic. The bottom line of this is, you know, FIFA is such a big part of the world, and Falke is a slimy piece of work, but this Al Khelaifi guy is the slime you use to slime the piece of
work.
Wow. It's horrendous.
What a monster.
So he's been banned for 10 years as Falke, and we're waiting for this story to unfold. Mm-hmm. Qatar should have the World Cup taken away from them. It's madness at FIFA, Gareth. So I just thought, you know, that was just too much for me. I can't even deal with it. But this weekend, we know there's rugby, there's football. So if you love rugby this morning, Crusaders, Highlanders, Rebels, Sharks, Chiefs, Brumbies, Red Sun Wolves, and of course the my pick for the weekend, Stormers, Jaguares, Bulls, Blues. That is your Super Rugby for the weekend. Okay. And if you're into the football, of course, Chelsea play the Spurs tomorrow. And then in the big one for me, it is Leicester, Man City. So look out for that. We'll talk on Monday about it. Go check out our Cliff Central Brew rugby group. It's Cliff Central Brew.
So you're not going to comment on Liverpool?
On Liverpool losing?
Yeah.
Well, it's to be expected. No. Listen, that was a tough game. I watched it, Atletico Madrid, but it's only the first leg. So it's not over yet. Remember, Champions League, so it's two ties. Liverpool will have to come again at Anfield. I'll comment after that because they are almost unbeatable at Anfield. But Diego Simeone, great job.
Okay. Thank you very much. They are not playing the Qatar World Cup 2022 in summer. They moved it to later.
But still, the fact that you had to move a whole European season lets you know it was so corrupt already. You're going to move around a whole season for everyone.
They will hold it in Qatar, which is the first time the competition will be held in the Middle East. The tournament is scheduled to take place from 21st November to 18th December.
I'm aware of this.
Which is the host nation's national day. It's pronounced Qatar.
Say it.
Qatar?
Qatar.
Qatar. I'm wearing a thob. I'm aware of all of this, but it's nonsense that we had to move the European season so that a World Cup, a corrupt World Cup, it's still going to be like 35 degrees in their winter, by the
way. Oki says he lived there for 6 years and it was the best 6 years of his life. He says Qatar is fantastic.
I'm sure he does. It's because he got paid tax-free and dollars in cash, I'm sure.
Very good. Sean has sent me two pictures, one of a Vietnamese chap whose name is Da Fuck, spelled D-A and then P-H-U-C. Da Fuck. What a name.
That's awesome.
I would love to be called Da Fuck. And then another guy, a creepy old man, and it says Mo, M-O-E, Lester. Mo Lester, in loving memory of my husband who slipped away on August 11th, 2008. Mo Lester.
That's the greatest name I think I've ever heard.
All right, Mbulelo, please explain the Barcelona striker situation.
Yeah, so they've...
This is from Hoffman.
Oh, do we want to bore people with that?
Yes, go on.
All right,
you have 5 seconds to do it.
Go. Yeah, they've had a striker crisis, and it's actually become a little bit of a moral problem. Is they've taken a guy from Leganes who are probably going to get relegated now, and he was a flop at Middlesbrough, and now he's gone to Barcelona because Luis Suarez is injured, mm-hmm. and they can't replace him, and they've had tragedy. So what's happened there is people are unhappy because they've bullied that other team into essentially handing over their striker and almost condemning the small team to being relegated. So people are just unhappy about it, but it happens all the time.
Okay, I'll pretend to care.
Yeah.
It is 5 minutes to seven, cliffcentral.com. Today being a Friday, we've got Paolo and Dari coming in later on, 11 o'clock for the live 80s show, which everybody seems to love. You can listen in live at 11 o'clock this morning, find out what Dari and Paolo have got on their menu for you. They always play a bunch of 80s songs, give you some background. It's a little bit nostalgic. And it's lots of fun. And of course, they were at the same concert I was at last Saturday, so they no doubt have some feedback about that. But because we've got Cindy Alter popping in a little later on, I thought we'd just double up on the 80s. And I'd play you the cheesiest 80s song I could find. And I know that most people would agree with me. This is easily the most cheesy 80s song of all time. So here it is. CliffCentral.com